You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today.
Hello, and welcome to the Friday edition of The Effective Statistician. My name is Alan Benning, and in these Friday episodes, I explore things that can help a statistician become more effective. The topic I want to discuss today is trust. Trust, as I always say, is the backbone of leadership and the key to being inspirational. Before I give you some hints and tips on how you can become a more trustworthy leader or person, I want to get your mind thinking about this from you as a leader. The other thing I'm going to say is not everyone is going to like what I say, and that's healthy. It's healthy to have different opinions, and those different opinions are always welcome. And I know Alexander likes different opinions in The Effective Statistician. Let's go for those opinions. So before you switch off thinking, well, I'm not really a leader, I'm going to categorically say, yes, you are. You don't have to have some fancy title or be selected to be a leader by some person very senior in your organization. And you certainly don't need to have direct reports. You can choose to be a leader. In fact, you do choose to be a leader, even if you are selected in a particular title or in a particular role. You still have to choose to be that leader. And the more you can demonstrate the qualities of a leader, the more you influence and have impact in everybody around you. Now, I'm going to use an example for this. I'm going to use a friend of this podcast, Casper Rufiback, who many of you know I worked with at Roche. Many of you also know of Casper's expertise in the Esterman field, but also in the field of statistical methodology. But nobody said to him, Casper, you're going to become the expert in Esterman's, you're going to become the expert in statistical methodology. He chose to be the leader in those fields. So he chose to be a leader in the field of Esterman's. And what he did was proactively learn about the subject of Esterman's. And more he learned, the more and more he knew, the more and more people then saw him as the leader of Esterman's. But nobody told him to be there. So many of you will be saying, well, leadership's great, but what about management? And I'm going to say management and leadership are different. I always keep talking, whenever I talk to people about this particular topic, I always say that there are differences between leadership and management. It's not semantics either. There's a fantastic quote by Rear Admiral Grace Hopper. Please look her up if you don't know about her. She is one of the original data scientists and one of the first rear admirals, female rear admirals in the US Navy. And her quote goes along the lines of, you lead people, you manage things. It's a very simple thing to remember. But as you think about that, yes, you are always going to be leading people. And things are solid things that you can't really lead, but you can actually manage them and move them around. And I have heard a quantifying statement from this is that if you always lead soldiers into battle, you don't manage them into battle, you lead them. And so that's what a great leader would do. They'd be a leader of people, not of managing people. But is this just semantics? No. The more you start to say, I manage people, I manage people, I manage people, that will be ingrained in your head. And what I'm going to say is the more you think about managing people, you are micromanaging people. So there is a clear distinction. Simon Sinek has a great quote that there are two ways to influence human behavior. You can manipulate it or you can inspire it. Managing people is manipulating them. Leading people is inspiring them. If you want more on this difference between leadership and management, read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. In it, he distinguishes leadership and management by asking you to imagine you're going through a jungle and there's managers there that are creating plans about how to get machete wielders to be more effective. So you might get their arms to be stronger, you might be sharpening the blades of machetes. They're busy chopping down trees. The leader, on the other hand, climbs to the highest tree, looks around him, and then cries down, "Wrong jungle." The point here is the leader is the one who has the vision. The management is saying, well, okay, we're busy doing this stuff. We're busy getting the machete wielders to be stronger, the machetes to be sharper. But it doesn't matter. If they're going in the wrong direction, it doesn't matter how hard they work and how much they manage these things, they're going in the wrong direction. So you need to have leadership coupled with good management. And that's why I'm saying management is not bad, but you cannot have management without leadership. So how does this all relate to trust? Well, that's what I'm going to come to. I just want to assure you that you're all leaders and you always lead one person. That person's yourself. If you're not leading yourself, think about it. The other thing I am going to say is that good leaders are trustworthy and inspirational. And the two go hand in hand. And I use the word inspiration rather than motivation. And again, you might be arguing, well, aren't these the same? No, they are not the same. There's a parable of the donkey and the carrot versus the stick approach to make the donkey move. Both of the carrot and the stick are motivational. They're motivational because if you hit the donkey, he's going to move. You put the carrot in front of him, he's going to move. Now, what happens if you remove either of those aspects, either remove the carrot or the stick? The donkey does not move. Donkey stays where they are. So you remove them, donkey's going to stay where they are. Doesn't matter how much you shout at him, he's just not going to do anything. So what you need to do is nurture the donkey. Nurture it by giving it some love, giving it companionship. It will trust you and you might not need much to do much for it to move along. It might just move the minute it sees you because it's now trusting you. So I hope you're seeing that being a leader and being trustworthy leads to being inspirational. It's a virtuous circle. If you can imagine these three in a circle, the more you are trustworthy, the more you build trust, the more you can become inspirational, the better leader you become, and then so on and so on. So I've talked a lot about the differences between leadership and management and how to be inspirational versus motivational. So how do we gain this thing called trust? Now, one of the most important things I'm going to say to you, the listeners here, is be authentic. If you act in a certain way to try and make people trust you, you are now trying to manipulate them. You're going back to that manipulative approach. Yes, they might, for the time, you might have some influence, but it'll be short term. If you try to make people trust you and not be authentic, it will come across as fake. And in the long term, it's not a recipe for success. And you keep having to think, well, what did I do? What did I say last time? You keep having to go back and worry about that. So the thing I would encourage you to do is just be authentic. Be authentic. Don't try and just please people. building trust is not about getting people to like you or pleasing them. And what people pleasing really is manipulation. Again, don't fake it, be authentic. The other thing I'm going to encourage you to do is not think about this in terms of trust equations, which is slightly odd for a podcast for statisticians. Now, I often say, building on the George Box quote, that all trust equations are wrong, but some of them are useful. But no one keeps a trust score for people. I would argue no one keeps a trust score for people. I certainly don't. And if people do keep a trust score for people, then you got to think, well, okay, what's their issues? And I'm going to leave you to think about that as your own thoughts. So I'm going to say, don't think about trust in terms of necessarily a trust equation. The other problem with thinking about trust equations is that in the numerator, they're usually additive. Credibility plus reliability plus intimacy, all divided by something called self-orientation. So what's the problem with this? Well, let's take an example. Let's say there's a statistician working in the pharmaceutical industry. They're statisticians, they've been there for 20 years, so they might have some credibility already. They may have written a number of papers, adds to their credibility. They're honest with all their dealings, so they have intimacy. And they're not doing the work for themselves, but they say, well, I'm doing it for patients. All well and good. But they don't deliver. They don't deliver on time. They deliver the wrong things. They make mistakes. So their reliability has now gone down. But if you use the additive trust equation, they have something for credibility. They have something for intimacy. They have something for self-orientation, so they'll have a trust score. But deep down, you don't trust them to deliver. So what should a trust equation look like? Dr. John Blakey, in his book, The Trusted Executive, talks about a multiplicative trust equation. Trustworthiness equals ability, multiplied by integrity, multiplied by benevolence. And in my example above, the trust score is now zero, because that person's ability is really not there because they're not being consistent and they haven't been able to deliver things. And this reflects more on how we feel. But does trust equations matter? I've said already that I don't believe trust equations actually matter. So what I'm going to do now is turn to so-called habits of trust, which are outlined again in John Blakey's book, The Trusted Executive. And these 9 habits of trust underpin John Blakey's trust equation. And they are things that you choose to do. The theory is, if you choose to exhibit a habit, the more trustworthy you become. So the habits are: 1, to choose to deliver; 2, to choose to be open; 3, choose to be honest; 4, choose to be brave; 5, choose to coach; 6, choose to be humble; 7, choose to evangelize; 8, choose to be consistent; and 9, choose to be kind. A simple way of remembering these is to think of the acronym DO HB CHECK. I would also encourage people just to write these down. Write them down on a piece of paper, and the more you think about that acronym, the more you'll remember these. Now, I'm going to go into some nuances about all of these particular habits. But I'll also say that I'm a work in progress myself. I'm not perfect in all of these habits. And I know when I don't live to these habits, my trust has gone down. Not only my trust in myself, but also trust in other people. One thing I've learned along the way is that trust is like a bank account. If you build up enough reserves slowly and over time, you build that trust. And one slip, or minor slip, might not be bad, might not be too bad. It might be if you don't correct it quickly, but it might not be that bad. Although what I would ask people what might be a deposit for them, what might be a withdrawal for them. They might be different to what you think they are. So now a bit more onto the nuances of each of these habits. So the first is choose to deliver. And this sounds pretty obvious, doesn't it? You know, you've got to deliver things. And as a leader, your main job is to deliver. So I would say as a leader, as an employee, whatever, you've got to be delivering. The minute you don't start delivering, the minute your trust goes down. So if you say, I'm going to deliver the results of this trial by this date, make sure you do deliver. If you make a mistake and say, well, okay, I haven't, then be open and honest about it. And I'm going to come on to those habits in a minute. So let's say I made a mistake and I can't deliver by the end of next week. Well, okay, then say, I've made a mistake. I cannot deliver this by the end of next week, but I can get it to you by the end of the week after, or the middle of the week after, or the beginning of the week after. People are much more forgiving if you can be honest and open up front. But one thing I would say is don't wait until the deadline has passed before you start being open and honest. Do it early on. If you realize, well, I'm not going to deliver this by the end of the day, then make sure you communicate that to somebody. Make sure you communicate it. So being honest is all about that. And being open is about sharing your concerns if you have them. If there's bad news to share, share it. Share how you're feeling as well. Be open about your own feelings. And again, that's one way you're going to get develop trust with people. When you choose to coach, I'm not going to say you have to be a professional coach. I'm a professional coach myself, but I'm not saying you have to be. And it's not about using fantastic coaching skills. You don't have to go on some coaching skills course to actually be able to coach. It means more about empowering people and truly listening to them, not listening to ask your own particular question or to make your own particular point, but really listening to people and asking them how they're feeling, how they're getting on, how they're doing with their various things. But it's not a cozy chat. Don't think of coaching as a cozy chat. It's all about working and challenging people, but letting them find their own solutions. Also be careful about jumping in immediately to give advice. We all have an advice monster. That advice monster sits there. When somebody comes to us and says, I want your advice, they go, yeah, fantastic. I can jump in with my fantastic advice. But remember, you might be answering the wrong question. So make sure you're staying curious and you're actually finding out and letting them, you're better off actually letting them come up with their own answer rather than giving your own fantastic advice. And if you do give advice, ask them, how does that resonate with you? Being humble is something we all should choose to do. I've already said we're all leaders, so we all should be being humble. And what being humble looks like is where we seek input from others when there's something we don't know. And we admit we don't know something. It's showing a vulnerability. It's showing that we're vulnerable. We actually, and that for some people can be quite dangerous. But vulnerability is not a weakness. In fact, admitting you don't know something is actually far stronger than not admitting and then going away and making something up. Remember, there is not one person on this earth that knows absolutely everything. So never behave like you do. If there's something you don't know, see your hand up, put your hand up and say, I don't know. I can find out. I know I can ask this person. I know I can ask that person. Find it out. Evangelizing is a word we don't use very often, but it's something we can actually do quite well if we just try it the once or try it the twice. You know, we can try it. And the more we try it, the more it becomes a habit. What this means is if somebody does something fantastic, something in your team or something in another team, or one of your colleagues just does something fantastic, why don't you recognize that person? Put a post together, recognize them on LinkedIn, recognize them internally. You will not believe how much trust they'll start to have in you if you start to recognize them. When you're recognizing them though, do not give the credit to yourself, because if you do, you'll erode that trust straight away. If you're evangelizing somebody, evangelize them. Don't be taking the credit for yourself. Being consistent is something that I have often struggled with. And I'm not sure if it's something that's in my past or wherever it is, but it's something that I've struggled with certainly in my past. But being consistent is critical to being trusted. So whatever the circumstances, you need to keep your message consistent. It shouldn't change depending on who you're actually talking to. Doesn't matter if you're talking to the most senior person in the world, the old hippo effect. You shouldn't be changing your opinion just because somebody says you should change your opinion. Be consistent. Your trust will go up and you'll be so much more of a leader as you do that. Now, I'm going to leave the most important one till last, and that's choosing to be kind. And that may sound a bit weak, but it's not. Choosing to be kind, I would argue, is the biggest builder of trust there is, but it's one that's overlooked. And I'm not talking here about being walked all over or anything like that. I'm talking here about showing empathy to people, thanking somebody for the job they've done, and a job they've done well is kindness in itself, and explaining to them what they did well and how they've influenced people. That is kindness. Another way of being kind is if somebody's going through a difficult time, if you've got somebody in your team or a friend or a colleague who's going through a difficult time, be there to support them. And that is showing kindness. So they have the habits of trust. Remember the acronym, do HB check. Choose to deliver, choose to be open, choose to be honest, choose to be brave, choose to coach, choose to be humble, choose to evangelize, choose to be consistent, and choose to be kind. If you practice these habits regularly, you'll find that trust builds quickly. There's an old saying that trust arrives on foot and leaves on horseback. So this is one of the things we need to be wary of when we're cultivating these habits of trust. I would argue that it can arrive on horseback, but the minute you then underline some of the issues around trust, that's when it will leave on horseback. And I'm going to leave you with a quote from Stephen Covey. Trust is the glue of life. It's the most essential ingredient in effective communication, and it's the foundational principle that holds all relationships. So thank you for listening to this edition of The Effective Statistician. If you liked what you heard today, don't forget to subscribe to The Effective Statistician podcast and sign up for The Effective Statistician newsletter. Thank you very much for listening.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.